This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago
Bullseye. Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to another episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I'm your host, Mark Lewenthal, and with me, as always, is Captain Fred A. Pfeiffer III. How are you, Freddie?
Mark, I'm living the dream. Chicago, 70 degrees one day, 40 the next day. What do you expect for March, right? What do you expect for March? But I'm still riding the high going to that game last Monday. I don't know about you. That was one of the best experiences I've ever had, going to a Chicago Bulls game. Definitely one of the closest times, one of the best times that I've ever had as far as seats go. What did you say?
Yeah, absolutely. When was the last time we did a show?
I mean, it's been a while. It's been over a week. We were going pretty well there, you know, multiple times a week, and you know, we've both been pretty busy, so we didn't get one out at least for the past week. Why don't we start talking about our experiences at the UC on, what was the date of that? So it was a week ago.
It was the Memphis game.
Exactly. And,
you know, when you get seats like those, Fred, win, lose, or draw, it's a great experience. I mean, the week before that, I had the experience of being second row for Bulls Clippers, and we got kind of spanked in that game, and yet it was still a great time. Then with you, we had very good seats for 14 rows behind the Bulls bench against the Grizzlies. And, you know, again, we lost, but at least they made it exciting. And when you're in those kinds of seats, like, it is electric. Like, when Snell hit those threes to take the lead ever so briefly, it was really quite an experience. Now the shoot around, seeing how great Jimmy looked in the shoot around, even though Jimmy's not even back yet. I mean, that was over a week ago. Jimmy Butler by this point has got to look a lot better.
Well, let's give a little background on what happened. We work with a great guy, or I work with a great guy named Tim Gallagher, who actually grew up with John Paxson in the same neighborhood. So they've been friends for a long time. Pax, the great guy that he is, no matter all the haters out there who don't like him, you can't deny he's a first-class human being. He was a first-class basketball player for the Bulls, and I think he's done a great job as the GM and vice president of basketball operations, etc. But that said, he comes through with tickets for Tim and his three friends, one of them being myself, you, and our other good friend Steve Muro. And these seats are just incredible. So we get there, we get there very early, and we watch warm-ups. First thing I noticed at warm-ups, we were there probably was an hour before tip-off, Butler's out there. Butler hit 9 out of 10 threes. When I was watching him, I was counting him. He looked fantastic. So I think he's, in everything I've read, he'll be fine before the playoffs. So he'll be back and he'll be playing well. We also saw, who else was out there that, Gasol came out. Noah, we saw in warm-ups. I mean, we saw pretty much the entire team before the actual kind of like layup drills. And, the basic I took from it was Butler looks good. He's going to be rock solid. Oh, and McDermott was out there early and just nailing threes at an incredible rate. So I thought he looked really good too. What'd you think? Any impressions? Also, Gasol signing the autographs was a real class move. I've never seen that before where a guy just actually took time. You see that occasionally in spring training for baseball, but he actually took time to stop and sign and took pictures with fans who had gathered, you know, courtside right there into the tunnel. I don't know if you caught that. That was another class move.
Very class move.
So they come out for warm-ups, and I counted Heinrich, you know, so they're doing the layup line, but Heinrich stopped and taking jumpers. No lie, Heinrich was 1 for 10 in pregame. The first 10 shots he took, all of them about 18-footers, you know, he dribbled through his legs a few times, stop and pop, he was 1 of 10. In his defense, after the 1 of 10, he probably shot 50% for the rest of the warm-up, but never a good sign if you're shooting about, you know, what, 30% overall in warm-ups. I don't know about you,
mm-hmm.
if you agree with that.
Terrible.
Game starts, I don't know, I'd like to hear your initial impressions of Memphis. Mine are, you know, some of the greatest teams I've ever seen, the Bulls, 96, 97, 90. You know, the Bulls with Pippen and Jordan on the perimeter guarding guys phenomenal. The Heat a few years ago with Wade when he was a little younger and better in better shape, and LeBron James, incredible guarding on the perimeter. I tell you what, Conley and that was some of the best perimeter defense I've seen in a long time. Tony Allen, I mean, that was insane at the end of the game. How those guys just said, "All right, that's enough. We're going to lock it down." Those guys are some incredible defenders at Memphis. What say you?
It reminded me a little bit about the championship Bulls, not in terms of, you know, quality of players, but just in terms of the old Bulls teams were able to say at a certain point of the game, if the game was a little too tight for their liking, all right, this is it. And then within like 2 minutes, they would completely change the game around. They've got the lead again. You know, I mean, we did a good job of getting back into that game. It was when their starters weren't playing. We did take out Tony Snell. A lot of people had a problem with that. Tony Snell was only taken out of the game, though, for like 6 seconds. I mean, he came right back into the game.
No, it was longer than that. It wasn't very long. But the point of the matter is, I said the same thing when it happened. Why do you take out Tony Snell after he hits four threes? You don't take him out. This is Tom Thibodeau, a guy who plays guys 48 minutes. What are you taking him out for? He didn't show any
minutes restriction. Right? He was on a minutes restriction.
Tony Snell's not.
No.
Why is Tony Snell on a minutes restriction? No, he's not. That was a ridiculous one. Thibodeau was horrible in that fourth quarter. I know there's a lot of Thibodeau lovers. There's no excuse for three of the things he did. Number one, you get a technical for six guys coming out of a timeout. Inexcusable. I saw exactly how it happened. It was like I think it was a one-possession game at the time. He sends in Noah to check in. And I was watching, and I was getting excited because I saw him tell him to go in for more. That's how close we were. And so I'm, jumble lineup. They're going to close with the jumble lineup. I'm going nuts with Mirotić, Gasol, and Noah. Timeout, I think it was on Memphis. Everybody comes back. They walk out onto the court, and Noah didn't tell Moore he was going in for him. And Moore, I'm sure, just assumed that Noah was going in for either Gasol or Mirotić, not thinking he would go in for the two guard, right? So they send six guys out there. That just can't happen. You got to have a coach on the staff, you know, say, hey, we got six guys walking out there and grabbing one of them and stopping that from happening. Instead, you get a key technical and you lose it. That was, to me, the key momentum shift, number one. Number two, he uses all his timeouts with 2 minutes left. Now, I thought I'd seen the end of that, you know, after Vinny Del Negro and Tibbs' credit over the last few years. He's always had a timeout, usually at the end of games. All of a sudden, he's been doing it lately. He's been using all his timeouts with multiple minutes left. It's insanity to have no timeouts left in an NBA game with a full 2 minutes left, but somehow Thibodeau did that. And number three, what was the third thing that pissed me off about his coach? Well, yeah, that move there where he pulled out Snell and basically ruined his heat check. His hands were on fire, and you pull him out. I don't understand any justification for those two moves.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm sorry, my attention's been taken away here for a minute. I didn't know this until just now, but former Bull Jack Haley today passed away at 51 years old.
I did hear that.
Whether you know who Jack Haley is or not, I mean, we at the Chicago Bulls, I have respect for every Bull that has, you know, donned the jersey. If you own a shirt of the 96 championship team, You have Jack Haley, right? You might be like, who is that white guy right there? It's not John Paxson. I didn't say he wasn't on the team. That was Jack Haley. And Jack Haley played that season. He played in one game in only 7 minutes. But he was in the league for 9 years and passed away today at 51 years old. So our thoughts go out.
How did he die?
He had heart disease.
Heart disease at that age? Oh, my gosh. It's horrible.
Right? 51 years old. And, I mean, you're talking about somebody that was an athlete. So definitely... Definitely a sad day in the NBA. I mean, it's always sad when you lose somebody, you know, no matter what they do in the game. And he is somebody that played for 9 seasons. So our thoughts go out to Jack Haley.
Yeah, and his family. That's awful. Yeah, and in case, if you ever see an 80s or late 80s clip of Jordan doing some incredible play and you see a guy on the bench going nuts, that was Jack Haley. And he was also kind of Dennis Rodman's, you know, personal, kind of watched him. You know, I think he was always added to teams that Rodman was on because he kind of tried to keep him in line. You know, not a great talent, but, you know, still an NBA player and a part of the, in my opinion, the greatest team of all time. It was just,
yeah, and I mean, you got to look at every part of that, whether it's in the locker room or what. I mean, look, Phil Jackson today, you know, was one of the first people to come out and make a statement on him. So regardless of which, you know, a lot of players, you don't know exactly what their contributions are, you know, off the court. I mean, the perfect example is Brian Scalabrine. I mean, the guy barely played unless there was injuries, and yet, for whatever reason, we kept bringing him back over and over and over again, and I'm sure that it has something to do with their effect off the floor. So for what, you know, whatever it is, I mean, it, you know, it really doesn't matter from a basketball standpoint. You know, from a human standpoint, it's sad whenever you lose anybody in the NBA, and, you know, our thoughts go out to Jack Haley.
Yeah. Well, back to the discussion, though, you know, again, thoughts and prayers of Jack Haley's family and all his fans. But back to our discussion regarding the game last Monday, another thing I noticed that you don't really see on TV is Tibbs during timeouts. He definitely gets his entire, you know, 60 seconds. Most of the coaches in the NBA, you see, get a timeout, and they stand and talk with their assistants for probably about 40 seconds, and then I'll walk in and say something in the last 20. Tibbs is right there in their faces, full 60 seconds. He's also a lot more vociferous with some players. He just tore Tony Snell a new one before he hit those four threes on a defensive lapse where he didn't come to help on a Gasol dunk. I don't know if you recall that moment. He just laid into him. I've never seen an NBA coach lay into a player like that. You'll see that in college occasionally, but rarely in the NBA, and it was something to behold. So, I don't know, what other thoughts are one more thing I wanted to mention. Dunleavy missed about 17 open threes. I don't know what's wrong with the guy since he's come back, but overall, he's been pretty poor, in my opinion, since he's come back. I don't know what's up with him. Seems like he's missing a ton of threes, wide open ones, for that, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Mark, but he's really been down to me lately. I don't know what the deal is with him.
Yeah, he's absolutely been terrible. But on the flip side, you do have some guys that have started to show life that have showed life all year, especially from three-point land. I mean, Nico, I don't remember exactly when we did our last show, but obviously since everybody went down, I'm sure it was around this time because I think our last show was right after we found out that Derek was going to be back this year and kind of where we stood with the team. Since then, Nico's been kind of the guy. I mean, it's been kind of Joakim and Nico kind of manning this team, and Nico's been awesome. I mean, you really got to give that credit. I mean, he's had his ups and he's had some downs, but for the most part, for a guy that didn't really play this year, I mean, over the last five games, he's averaging 19 points and eight rebounds. I mean, there's nothing you could say badly about that. Turnovers, still 2.8 for somebody that doesn't handle the ball as much. That's a little much, but still, rookie, doesn't play a whole lot. He had 27 points against Oklahoma City. I mean, this is a guy that's consistently contributing. He's showing that he can get to the line. A rookie who hasn't really made his mark yet this year is getting to the line on average. In the last five games, he's been getting to the line 6.5 times a game. That's great. He got to the line 9 times against Oklahoma City. He's shooting great from the line, too. He's shooting 90% over the last five. It means a lot for a guy of his stature to be getting calls. One of the things I hate about the NBA is this, this superstars get the calls for things like they need any more help. But you know, Nico's been playing great. Doug McDermott, I have to double-check exactly what he's been doing. I don't know the last exact five, but he certainly had a chance to show. I know that he's had a handful of good games. He's had some poor ones after that, but he has had some good games. So, I mean, other players have stepped up a little bit since Dunleavy's been playing a little bit worse. You know, it's tough to get a read right now. I mean, I'm happy right now kind of with where the team's at because, well, I'm happy on one front, and we're going to get to the bad front in a minute. I'm happy on the front that the guys on the team that we were concerned about, who hadn't gotten enough run this year to really make any sorts of judgments on, those guys seem to be starting to play okay. You're right, Dunleavy's not. But, I mean, Dunleavy was not a question mark. Dunleavy, unfortunately, was somebody that we felt pretty confident in, and, you know, he hasn't really come back from that injury yet. I hope that this one thing Thibodeau never does is make adjustments based upon players' performance. Somebody just gets a reputation with that guy, and it's like you literally have to shoot him for the next guy up to get his shot. And we got to talk about Thibodeau in this show, and I'm sure we're going to get into him very quickly here because it's a major point of conversation right now. But my biggest beef is his reluctance to play guys based upon how they're playing and his reluctance to really give guys a shot, even when they've earned it, if some starter hasn't had some traumatic thing happen to them, whether they deserve it or whether they don't. And in this situation, Mike Dunleavy's still playing almost 30 minutes a night. McDermott's barely seeing the floor. And McDermott overall has been better than Dunleavy's been. He hasn't been great.
Well, McDermott, McDermott had 10 points in 5 minutes against Charlotte in the first half. And I just couldn't believe he pulled him out after going 3 for 4 and 10 points in 5 minutes. How do you do that? You know, you make a defensive lapse. Every rookie has defensive lapses.
Yeah,
every rookie makes
sure.
mistakes on defense. You can't keep on playing the game like you're just tentative and continually worried you're going to be pulled. He has a really nice streak there, getting 10 points in 5 minutes, and he hardly see him again until finally he puts him in the end of third quarter because the offense had just basically crawled to a nub. I find it really frustrating. I do want to say a couple guys I do want to recognize for some excellent play. Overall, Brooks has been pretty awesome recently. I thought he had an incredible game in the 76ers victory. I mean, without him, we would have lost that game. He's had some really nice games in this stretch here where everybody's been hurt, stepped up great. Heinrich sucked. He's been terrible, you know, as usual. We need guys to step up. Matt Clown always just seems to screw it up on the offensive end, bricking shot after shot, never stepping it up. He is so done. I mean, I just can't even believe this guy's got a spot on the team.
I don't blame Heinrich, though. I blame him.
You're finally seeing
his minutes go down.
Well,
but when you've got Doug
McDermott
shooting 77% from three over the last five games, he's shooting 77% from three in 10 minutes. I mean, it's ridiculous that when somebody plays as good as McDermott's been playing, and it's like, yeah, you're going to have some off times, but it's like he's starting to find a rhythm. You're going to keep playing Kirk Heinrich the same amount of nights every single night between 18 and 22 minutes a game. Every single game, over the last five games, he's really improved. I mean, he's shooting 32%. I mean, for him, that's really quite incredible. I mean, he has picked up his game a little bit in the last stretch of games from just being absolutely horrific. He just sucks as far as being, you know, he's not the worst player in the NBA. He's like top five worst. But I don't get it. I don't get it. And, I mean, I think that this really brings us down. We could talk about a lot of guys right now, Fred, because we should not be right now playing as poorly as we're playing. I think that we've lost four of the last five, right? Isn't that what it is right now?
Well, no, it's actually 5 to 6, but that's where I disagree with you. Mark, we're missing Derrick Rose, we're missing Jimmy Butler, missing Taj Gibson, three of our top six players. Noah's been out. And Noah, that's where I also disagree. I don't think Noah's played particularly well. He had a great game against Oklahoma City. That was one of his best offensive games of the year. He finally shot 6-7. That Memphis game, and I know he's, you know, has great assist totals. The guy's a fantastic passer. No denying that. He's the only center, I believe, in the top 50 in assists per game. He's been great with passing the ball. Outside of that, I mean, that Memphis game, I thought he was a train wreck. He clearly looked hurt. There was something wrong with him. I don't know, you know, why he missed the next one, but he was either laboring or struggling or hurt. And teams aren't even coming out to the free throw line to pick him up anymore. I don't recall him in the past. I recall him in the past occasionally unwinding the tornado shot and hitting that jumper. I can't remember the last time I saw him hit that jumper before Oklahoma City. He doesn't even try to attempt it. It's unbelievable. Guys are like literally guarding him at the, you know, dotted line in the paint. They're not even coming out on him. And to me, you've got to be able at least to have that threat. You've got to step up to the free throw line and shoot that ball and be confident going in. He's not doing that. That's a huge issue. Because the offense is just going to be packed down low. You're going to continue to have Gasol sticking out on the perimeter as a stretch five when he should be down low, you know, scoring for you. That is a major issue that he needs to start stepping up and hitting the free throw line jumper. They're giving it to him every time. Step up and do it. But he hasn't been that good, in my opinion, again. I don't know if he's looking hurt again or what, but if you look at his stretch of games outside Oklahoma City, has not been productive offensively. With the exception of the assist numbers, he's not shot a high percentage. I have major concerns about him going forward.
Oh, how can't you? Yeah, I mean, he's looked like a shell of himself this year. He's had a few moments of glory, like you mentioned, but that's the problem, is that, you know, Dwayne Wade had a great game last night, but the fact is, you look at his, you know, what his career has been over the last couple seasons, and, you know, it's clear that his consistency is not there. Noah, though, has really taken a nosedive, and the problem is that Noah has always been a player that I feel needed to be, you know, 110% to be as effective and an impact of a, you know, to the type of impact player that he was last year. And yeah, something's off, and you know, I don't know quite what it is.
Well, everybody's blaming it on Gasol. And I just want to yell out, I mean, listen, dude, it's not all Gasol. When Gasol's not on the court, this guy still has issues sometimes. And I think it's because he's clearly not healthy. And I don't know what you do to get him healthy. And I don't know what you can do. It's a rough situation, my man. I mean, it really is, because he's so important. I mean, this was a first-team All-NBA last year. Defensive player of the year, and he's been a shadow of what he was.
He has, but we haven't really seen glimpses yet to make us think that he's really going to get better. We've seen very brief glimpses.
Yeah, before the six-game stretch, he had a couple really solid games. And all of a sudden, again, he looks hurt. I mean, that Memphis game, I thought he was terrible. And, you know, nobody ever wants to say it, you know, because he's such a great guy, and he's such a good guy, and he's such a heart of the team. He plays so hard. He did not have a good game. Not at all. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to say. I mean, he really hasn't looked that great. I mean, though he did look really good against Oklahoma City, and we had a chance in that game. If for a variety of things, we had a chance, but to pull him in the biggest stretch of the game, and we could talk about minute restrictions, but, you know, like Casey said today, most coaches, when a player's under minute restrictions, is going to save part of some of those minutes until the end of the game. He's also gone against those minute restrictions. I think it was something like 17 games this year he went against minute restrictions. Then there were five other games outside of that in overtime where he went against the minute restrictions. And yet then he chooses this game, where we're in the game, to go against the minute restrictions. You know, I do think, Fred, that we could have had at least two more victories in the last stretch of games. We should have beaten Charlotte. We were winning the entire game, and then we just fell apart. And, you know, I think that against Oklahoma City, we certainly had a good shot, and we fell apart at the end. And, you know, you're right. A lot of our big players are out right now, and, you know, thank God Taj Gibson today practiced. So did Jimmy Butler, full contact practice. Derrick Rose today, first game where he did non-contact drills, so he's getting close to coming back. You know, I think we have 14 games left in the season, maybe it's 13 now, but, you know, we should have those guys back for at least some time before we go into the playoffs, but we're certainly on a downswing right now, and it's rough, because, you know, you do have, it's really unlikely that you're going to drop to six, but that's when we're going to really have some
really
problems,
important.
And frankly, I really, if we can, to get that three spot, because if we get that three spot, we start off against Milwaukee in the playoffs. We have smushed Milwaukee every time we've played them this year, and I think it's very important, especially with our team being as injured as it's been, to give them a little bit of time to find their cohesiveness against them. I am scared if we play Washington in the first round, and the problem is right now we are on a nosedive. And, I mean, we're 4-6 in the last 10, but specifically, really recently, we've been playing really bad. And, I mean, thank goodness Toronto's keeping up pace, and they've been playing really bad too. But unless something changes very quickly, then we're going to be stuck at the fourth spot. And what really bothers me is when you look at the fact that, in my opinion, Thibodeau is playing games with management at this point. And I mean, Casey Johnson seems to think that too. Casey Johnson thinks that Thibodeau taking Joakim out in a crucial stretch in the last game was a vindictive act against management. It was not just him doing what he thought was right. It seemed pretty apparent to everybody that was not the right. The way that he managed his minutes was not the right thing to do. We can't be playing with losses at this time of the year. There are three teams right now, Washington, ourselves, and Toronto, that are right next to each other, and frankly, we could still catch Cleveland under the right circumstances. It's unlikely, but we could. But certainly, Washington, ourselves, and Toronto are right next to each other. So for Thibodeau to be playing games against management at this point, to be doing it on the court, you've crossed some lines. You're going too
far. Well, I have to concur if what Casey said is true, that for 17 times this year, he's gone over the minutes restriction with Noah. I mean, that's a fireable offense, right? I mean, it pissed off John Paxson enough that he had a confrontation with Vinny Del Negro that became physical, and he's done it 17 times. Did you catch that?
But that doesn't include five overtimes. That doesn't include five overtimes. So he's done it 21 times. 22 times.
He's basically, there's a strict minutes restriction on Noah, which I completely agree with and concur with. You don't want that guy playing the ridiculous amount of minutes that Thibodeau had him playing in the last 10 regular season games last year. And if he's broken that 17 times, I mean, that's a doctor mandated or team mandated rule that he's broken. And then all of a sudden now he's gonna stand by it? I don't know.
Stand by it when you've jumbled together all of Noah's minutes, and then you don't have him at the end of the game. I mean,
yeah.
in Casey's eyes,
better?
It was something that he did against this was him against management. This was a mano a mano sort of stance, and I as a fan will not tolerate for that. I mean, come on, you got to listen to your bosses. We have talked about this on the last show that I mean we completely side with management and the fact that you do have the right to have a say. And if your coach is just simply saying, "No, I'm going to do whatever I want, regardless of what you think, I'm just going to do what I want," what kind of a relationship is that? What kind of a team are you trying to build? You're a team. Paxson, guards, Tibbs, they're a team. Everybody has to collaborate.
Let me just jump in with this, Mark. You know, Gasol played 43 minutes against the 76ers, one of the worst teams in basketball, the other night in the overtime game. We won the game great. I don't know. Is that really good for long-term health? Is that better or worse for Gasol being optimal in April and really going into the playoffs strong? You're going to play this guy, 36 to 48 minutes, the 45 minutes a game from here until all the other guys get back. Is that going to help you be a stronger team or weaker team? I don't know. I think it's going to make you weaker. I don't believe in playing this. Gasol should be at 32 minutes a game, 30 or 32 minutes a game. And if we lose some games, the 76ers and some horrible teams, so what? We've lost to, better teams, Oklahoma City, all these other teams have been playing high minutes in the 30s. Again, I just don't agree with it. I just don't think it's right. And I think it greatens the likelihood he's going to get hurt. And I just have a hard time believing that when the playoffs come, he's going to be in optimal shape to perform at his best.
The only reason that I have a problem with it is because he's been doing it all year. If it was just during, if Pau Gasol was averaging 30 minutes a game, and then during this stretch when everybody's been injured, he's been averaging 35, I'd be okay with it. But that's not the case. He's been averaging 35 minutes a game this season. That's too much for a guy that's 34 years old. Look, he's playing well now, but we can continue to take for granted the performance of players until they fall apart. Because we've seen it time and time again. It happened multiple times with Dang. It happened with Butler last year. It's happened with Joakim a bunch of times. It happens often. The guys aren't ready for the playoffs, and all of a sudden, oh, wait, now it's the players' problem. It is
a
long grind.
I think there's no doubt Gasol is tired in the
last few
weeks.
He's been playing great, though. His numbers have been really good.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. I can't even believe it's an argument, that he hasn't been great. I still see these guys throwing their, nerd stats out there, with the plus minus or whatever. I mean, the fact is, how about the PER stat, which is generally...
You can't do plus minus right now. When half your team's out, you can't do plus minus.
I completely agree with you. That's my argument right now. And then plus on top of that, he closes every game and he starts every game. He's playing against the best competition. Some of the biggest bums in the league have a great plus minus because they're playing against either second string team or like the second team in the second quarter or at the end of blowouts. I mean, I don't think you can go by that. I constantly get in arguments with people about this thing. The fact is he had the third highest PER in the NBA in February. His PER is the highest on the team. And then when you look at the PER stat, every guy up there is a good, fantastic basketball player. That's how I judge it. What does my eye say? This guy's a good basketball player. What does his PER stat say? He's a great basketball player. Then that's a pretty good stat. If you have a stat that tells you some bum from Milwaukee is better than Joakim Noah, I'd take the stat and throw it right out the window. There was a stat out there last year. It said Boozer was top 15 in the league in defense. I think it's defensive win share stat. Any stat that has Carlos Boozer in the top 15 related to defense is a stat you should take and immediately throw right out the window.
If you want to look at it, you're absolutely, you do have to discern these made up crazy stats. And use some judgment on him. Look, my final judgment on Thibodeau is going to be when Taj comes back. Now that Nico is playing so well, and he is, he's playing really well right now, and he's averaging 33 minutes a game, are the minutes to Taj Gibson going to come from Pau Gasol, or are they going to come from Nico? And if you want my personal opinion, they got to come from Pau Gasol. Or at least a big chunk of it. Gasol's minutes for the rest of the season should come down. You're seeing other coaches now, too, taking their players out for games near the end of the year. Memphis just did it the other day. They took everybody out together. And frankly, I'm almost okay with that because if you do everybody separately, you could lose a bunch of games. Take everyone out together in one game and you say, hey, if we win, we win. If we don't win, we don't. But for one game, these guys are resting, especially on like a back-to-back or something like that. Thibodeau...
Yeah.
Won't do it. Because every game matters, but if every game matters, why are you taking Joakim Noah out in crunch time when you've broken this minute restriction almost every time it's been an issue this entire season? I don't get it.
And we're not saying that Gasol or Nico is better than Gasol. You know, Nico's been a little bit inefficient lately. He hasn't actually shot the ball that great, but he's gotten a ton of points from the free throw line, and he's played well enough to show that he deserves more minutes. And it doesn't help Gasol optimize his playoff performance by playing these many minutes. I completely agree with you. Is a team going to be hurt if you give a ton of Gasol's minutes to Nico? Maybe. Maybe. All right, he may not play as well or be as efficient in scoring or block as many shots. But the fact is, overall, in the long term, the team will be better positioned for the playoffs if you take Gasol's minutes and give it to Nico. Why is this that hard to understand? You might lose a few more games during the regular season. I know that's what Thibodeau's thinking, but the guy can't see the big picture for it. And he's, you know, I got to win every game.
Is that what he's thinking? Is that what he's thinking when he's taking Joakim Noah out at the end of the game? We could have beaten Oklahoma City. Is really, what is it that matters to Thibodeau? Why he is so unpredictable that you don't know exactly, you don't know what he's going to do. It seemed like at least that there was a rhyme to his reason in years past that you can kind of, you know, predict what he was going to do based upon various trends that you've seen throughout the year. This year I don't feel like, especially the second half, I don't feel like that's the case. I feel like he's been much more all over the place, and it's like,
I'm still shocked. I'm still shocked at that Memphis game. I mean, if that was Vinny Del Negro, any other coach to make those three amateur mistakes, we'd still hear about it. Within 5 minutes, everybody forgot about it. How do you send six guys on the court and get a technical foul? Inexcusable. How do you waste all your timeouts with the full 2 minutes left? And then another thing, in the next game against the 76ers, the Bulls had the ball, could have had the ball 1.8 in half court, but guess what? He wasted all his timeouts. So when the Sixers tied it up with 1.8 left, plenty of time to get a shot off. Guess what? We got no timeouts and the clock runs out. We got to play another overtime game. And Gasol and Brooks got to kill themselves to win the game. So you know what? We'll never, ever criticize the guy because somehow we have this idea that the Bulls are a talentless bunch of morons and everything is done great because of Tom Thibodeau. I don't buy it. I'm just not. He's a great coach. Great defensive coach, but for once, when he does something wrong, let's call him out on it. He had a horrible freaking week. The 76ers game, and especially that game.
Yeah,
all right.
You're
I
absolutely
get going,
right.
My man.
I understand.
Yeah, it's
frustrating right now, but you know, hopefully by the time that we talk next time, we got some players back. And
I don't know about you, though, Mark. I still kind of believe, though. I still think the team could make its mark in the playoffs in a weird way. This is almost like a blessing in disguise that, you know, Butler and Rose aren't getting running in the ground. I heard Barkley say it. He still likes Chicago. I heard Simmons say that he still likes
Simmons
Chicago.
Simmons said it today.
So do I. I still like the Bulls. I still like the Bulls in the playoffs. I still think, especially if we get, I mean, Boston's at the 7th seed now. I mean, if we could somehow get to 2 or 3 and play Boston or anybody but Indiana.
No, they're
you know,
not.
Avoid Washington.
Boston's not in the playoffs right now.
I thought Boston's up to, where are they at?
I mean,
look it up.
Indiana, Miami,
sure?
And Boston are all tied. Right now, if the playoffs started today, based upon their playing against, you know, everyone playing against each other, Miami's win probably last night's what put Miami up. Boston, I think, was in yesterday, and then Miami swapped. So,
they're right there.
Of teams at the bottom right now, 30 and 36. Who are going to be vying for that final spot. I have a feeling it's not going to be Indiana just based upon how they've been playing. It's going to be Charlotte, Boston, or Miami. So regardless of which,
how is
it doesn't
Boston
matter.
There? Oh,
we're
my
not
God.
Playing, you're absolutely right. You're right. They certainly have less talent than Charlotte. They certainly have less talent than Miami, even without Chris Bosh. It's arguable about Indiana. They probably have less talent than Indiana, but you got to give Indiana credit where credit is due. This is a team that was demoralized by the loss of Paul George, and now they're playing extremely well. I mean, it's a testament to their coach. And you see, there's a lot of good coaches in this league. And where we used to put so much emphasis on Tibbs and that you're not going to find somebody else you know, that's better than him, you're starting to see guys emerge via a variety of different ways that they were acquired. You're seeing some guys emerge and you know, kind of make their mark as being, you know, top-tier coaches. I think that, you know, with the thing with Tibbs, that he's in a much more you know, high-profile situation because the Chicago Bulls. But look, don't be worried that if Tibbs goes, that we will not be able to replace him. As a whole, other than Vinny Del Negro, I feel like, you know, I mean, we found Tibbs. We gave him his first coaching
opportunity. I love every hire. I love Skiles. I thought Skiles was good. I take that back. I didn't love every hire. Daniel Del Negro was a horrible hire, but he wasn't their choice. He wanted to hire Doug Collins, and that was nixed by Jerry Reinsdorf. And Doug Collins would have been a fantastic pick as head coach of the Chicago Bulls. And you know what? I mean, we'll say what you will about Vinny Del Negro. The guy, you know, did suck, but never had a losing season with the Bulls. You know, we still managed to somehow cobble together, you know, two playoff teams, one very exciting team that took the, you know, the defending champs to seven games, and he had a losing season. They were 41-41 both years. So
yeah, and he still got picked up by another team afterwards. So obviously, he did enough to get that Clippers job. He didn't retain it, but he got it. I mean, whatever it is, I trust that our management will find a good replacement for Thibodeau, and I think that it's time for Thibodeau to go. It's not. I don't like this anymore.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. I'm still going to give him. Let's see how we do in the playoffs. If we have another flameout, you know, I'll be happy to send the limo to pick him up and send him wherever else he's going to go to run guys in the ground. But if we go to the Eastern Conference Finals or to the finals, I mean, how can you fire the guy? You can't do that. You just can't. You got to bring him back. Because I mean, it's a results oriented game, and if we finally get some results in the playoffs, then I'm all on board, man. I don't see how you can fire a guy to get you to the finals. So
yeah,
just wait and see
right.
Before you want to bury him. You know,
he's still
a damn good coach. I'm not going to totally deny that. I think he gets. You know, he works hard. I think he's a good coach, and he's a good X and O guy. But Lord Almighty, that Memphis game was a disaster. Anyhow, my man, I got to hit the road.
All right, Fred, as always, good times, and until next time, Vinny Bulls.
In basketball.